our custard.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Mo, and today is Wednesday, the 6th of December, and how do you do? How's everybody doing? The 6th of December. So, there you are. There you are. I don't know if we had some technical difficulties or not. I'm not sure if the theme song played or not. I'm just not sure. I can't tell. I'm not sure if it worked or if it didn't work. Or I don't have a clue. What can you do? But that's all right, you know. All I can do is kind of go along with things and see how things go. And I'll know later when I listen to the replay of this. That's all I can do. So how are you? What's going on? You may be able to hear a little bit of a fan sound in the background. Those are my fans. Yes, that's right. So I hope you're doing well. I hope you are doing well. I'm going to do something a little different today. That is, I'm actually going to be rather organized. Why? Well, wait a minute. Who's coming? No, it's not Santa. It's just me. But this is the time of year when some of the most amazing things happen, and one of them is the winter solstice. And the winter solstice is responsible for some of, or a lot of, or most of, maybe not all of, but most of our incredible traditions, our rites, our rituals. And I'm going to talk about that today. I call it the flora of the season. Now, it doesn't mean anything other than the flora of the season. Flora being, some of the cooler plants of the season. So that's what I'm going to talk about today and how it affects us and how it really is responsible for a lot of what we celebrate. Okay? Okay. God, I did a video on the equinoxes and the solstices on YouTube. And I say, okay, a lot. I say, right? And okay. And a guy just flipped out. He just had a, oh my God, he just left this, incredibly wrathful, you know, just this, you know, wrote it. And he just, and this guy is a calm guy. He teaches lessons on YouTube about how to stay calm and how to be collected and how to meditate and stuff like that. But he just, and I just went, wow, cool, you know. He wasn't very calm. And he wasn't very collected in his assessment of my idiosyncrasies in talking, which I have a lot of, huh? You know, I say, huh, all the time. I don't do that one, but maybe I'll pick it up. Maybe I'll pick up going, huh? No, I won't do that. That's annoying. I'm annoying. You know who's annoyed by me? My wife. She's annoyed because I can't hear very well. So consequently, I'm basically saying, what? Could you repeat that? What? Huh? And it's driving her out of her mind. Out of her mind. Now, I have an appointment to have an assessment. That's what it is. To have an assessment. No, that's not what it is. What is it? A consultation. That's right. Which means I have to pick out the hearing aids I'm going to get. Boy, my generation really needs these things. There are commercials on TV about it all the time. About the hearing aids we need. And so, you kids out there. You kids, when you're listening to the rock and roll or the hip hop, yeah, well, watch it with the volume, would you? Boy, I sure didn't. I have a friend of mine who used to listen to the headphones on 11, and he would do it for hours at a time. And now, actually, it's been about 10 years ago that he went, as his brother put it, as deaf as a doorknob. Which really wasn't very delicate, but that he was completely, and he had a type of deafness that was, even if he heard sounds, he couldn't make them out. Now, I kind of have that in one of my ears. The other ear isn't so bad. And I'm not deaf. I'm just very impacted. And that's because I was stupid. But at the same time, it might just be because my grandmother had definite hearing impairment. She had a hearing aid, and it was the size of a very old transistor radio. It was huge, and she wrapped it up in a handkerchief and put it in her bra. So it must have been really sensitive, you know, but I would think she could hear her heartbeat. But so I don't know why I'm telling you all this, you know. Thank you, doctor. But anyway, just that I get hollered at sometimes. Probably decidedly so, but it's also kind of good because there are times, I'm not going to get into that, but, you know, give away my secrets. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. No, it's actually true. I can't hear sometimes, and it's weird because you don't know what's going to, you know, set it off. So, but hearing aids are in my future, which is wonderful because now they can answer the phone, you know, and you can listen to music, stream The Grateful Dead. I don't need to stream much else, if anything, you know, maybe. And I have to make sure not to do it too loudly, because then it would be an issue. Yeah, man goes deaf because of hearing aids. Oh, Lord. What a world. You know, as I melt into the background. You know, poor Margaret Hamilton, when she was filming The Wizard of Oz, she really got hurt. You know that first scene where she, you know, she disappears in a ball of flame? Man, she really got hurt in that thing. She was terribly, terribly hurt. Spent a couple of weeks in the hospital, I think, because there was a door that was supposed to just give away underneath her. It was just supposed to open up and she would fall into a big, you know, soft, comfy, like a lounge chair or a lazy boy or so. Not lazy boy. I don't like them. And I will say that openly, you know. But, oh, your chair broke? Oh, what a shame. Oh, well, you're a big man. Those things happen to big men. You know, that sort of thing. but just, and she was supposed to just drop into this thing. Well, it didn't open, so she got almost the full brunt of all that. It opened late, and so, boom, she got this, you know, face full of fire. And she fell into a burning ring of fire, and boy, did it smart, I'm sure. And she was in the hospital for quite a while, I think, after that. And because she inhaled smoke or inhaled fire, which can really, and anyway, that's what I read. And copper, she had copper makeup, which was the green. And that made her really, really, really sick, as Buddy Ebsen was supposed to be the Tin Man. And of course, he was allergic to the aluminum, or the aluminium, as our friends across the pond say. And of course, they don't say. Say it that stupidly. But they do say it differently than we do. And they don't say pond, they say pond. They say pond, like James Bond. It's like Bond, but with a P. And do they pee in the pond? Maybe. So, anyway, he got hurt. You know. And Toto was scared to death of the those grumpy old guards, you know, it's, and the flying monkeys, the winged monkey. Who wouldn't be? I mean, they're creepy looking, you know. So, anyway, where was I? Where was I? I thought I was going to be organized today. Where was I? Drat. Double drat. Triple drat. W.C. Fields. If you've never watched a W.C. Fields movie, I suggest it heartily. He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Not everyone's going to like him, but boy, he was. I loved him. I still love him. Whenever I see a movie, they don't play his movies much anymore. Boy, when I was in high school, they were on all the time because it was they called it nostalgia. Well, it couldn't be nostalgia for my generation because we weren't around when he was popular the first time, you know. So, but that's the way it is. Okay, sanity. Call it in. I call upon the wisdom of sanity, upon the deities of something or the other. So anyway, the holidays. So the winter solstice is coming along here pretty near any day now. And what happens is that it happens now the way it did back then. And what happened was that the sun got lower and lower and lower in the sky every day. Now that's called the ecliptic. The path that the sun makes in the sky every day is known as the ecliptic. And so it gets real high in the sky, and it gets real low in the sky. And that is the Tropic of Cancer is the highest point it can get, and the Tropic of Capricorn is the lowest it can get. So, those two parts are known as the tropics. And I won't get into that, but it's very clever, very clever. If you look at a map or you look at a globe, you can see the tropics. Those are the places where the sun reaches its highest point. And those are the places, the tropics are the places where, for example, the Tropic of Cancer, that is the northernmost point where you can go and see. Let me think, am I doing this right now? Yeah, the Tropic of Cancer is the northernmost point where you could stand and see the sun straight overhead on the summer solstice. And the Tropic of Capricorn is the lowest point where you can see the sun overhead on the winter solstice. So in between those two points are known as the tropics and blah, 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 blah. But if you were in an agricultural place and the sun was getting lower and lower and lower and lower, and you were, oh, let's say 250,000 years ago when human beings were very primitive, and as if that weren't the case now. We are under some sort of delusion that we aren't primitive now. I beg to differ. I think that there's a lot of primitive stuff that we're doing right now, not very civilized and not very advanced. I think when women and children and men, well, in other words, just humans, are being killed every day all over the world, some by famine, some by disease, pestilence that can be avoided, many by war, by incendiary devices, by whether they're falling out of the sky or being tripped by wires or by drones or by whatever it may be, because of war, because of greed, because of some sort of irrational rationality, then that's not very, well, it's not very civilized, in my opinion. That's just how I feel about it. It's just not very civilized. So that's the name of that tune, as some people used to say. So we're about the same as we are. We're just now afraid of different things. Now, let me tell you, where I live, it was pretty near, I mean, it had to be close to 70, maybe 71, 72. And today is the 6th day of December. Now, when I was a kid, December meant, you know, wear a coat and maybe wear, you know, a couple of shirts and, you know, that sort of thing, because you were going to be cold. And as a kid, you're just as dumb as a rock, you know. So you'd go to school and you'd just freeze. Because you take your coat off and play on the playground and, you know, you do other things with it. You make it into a slingshot. And I mean, you just do all the things that kids do. But today, I mean, if I'd really wanted to and if I were a lot younger, I could have gone streaking and gone to jail. But I decided not to for many reasons. But the point is that a couple of 100,000 years ago, human beings saw that sun getting lower and lower on the horizon, and they had, you know, they were done hunting and gathering. They had probably done some civilization by then, and they'd figured out that you had to bring in the harvest, but they saw that sun going down. So they wondered, are we going to make it? Are we going to make it? Is there going to be another season where we get to eat? Is there going to be another season where we are going to thrive? And that's what this season is about, hope. It's about hope. Now, in the beginning, there wasn't necessarily faith, because faith says, yeah, we're going to survive. We're going to make it. We're going to be just fine. We're going to come out of this absolutely with our noses held straight up in the air. Now, wait a minute. I don't know why I said that. But I guess if you smell something bad, you throw your nose in the air. Or if you're better than others, and I've never been better than anyone, I don't think. Well, there's some people who do terrible things. I hope I'm better than them, at least better in actions, and not necessarily in much of anything else. But this is all about that solstice. And somewhere along the line, people realized, you know what? You know what, Gronk? Well, that's actually a person. It's an actual person named Gronk. Now, I know that's not his whole name. He's a football player. And bless him, I guess he's got quite a career going, or he's done now, and he's famous. I don't know what's going on. Let's say a Gronky. Okay, Gronky, you know what I've noticed? No, Monkey, which is Mo, in some other talk. I've noticed that... I've noticed that the solstice comes and has come for a long, long time, and the sun does rise on the ecliptic again, and we have summer eventually. So my theory is, wait a minute, you've got a theory? Yes, I do. Well, what is that theory? I was going to tell you before you interrupted me. Oh, sorry. My theory is that actually, my theory is that it's always going to do that. Well, how can you be so sure? Well, because it's always done that before. But that is an axiom, or an axiom, that's it. What do you mean by that? Well, it's presumed that it will do that. For example, I can say to you that the sun is going to rise tomorrow. Notice these guys have the same voice. That's how people were back in the old days. Everyone sounded the same. Well, I noticed that it's just... you could say the sun is going to rise tomorrow, but that's not for sure because it hasn't happened yet. Well, what do we do? What do we do? Well, we have to have something called faith. Okay, I like that. I like that idea of faith. And that's what this holiday is about. Faith. Faith that the sun will rise tomorrow. Faith that it will rise again upon the horizon. And we will once again have warm weather. And that warm weather will allow us to live. And for our families to grow. And after we're gone, that there will still be a world. Now, I saw some kids in a nursery school the other day. And they were running outside. And they were cute. Oh, man, were they cute. And I've got grandchildren. Cute. Oh, my goodness, are they cute. And I looked at those little kids playing in the nursery school, you know, with supervision, behind a fence. I wish they'd been behind bulletproof glass, because the world has changed in such a way in this country that I cannot recognize the world that I grew up in. And I thought to myself, I wish you the very best, and I wish you a world that is lovely and remarkable. That's what I wish. But even though I'm an optimist, and I always think and hope for the very best, I found that little twinge in me. God, I hope this works out. Because something has changed. People are nuts, you know? But that's what we want. We want the best. We want the very best for the future. And that's what this time of year is about. And that's why we wish for peace. And we wish for goodwill for everybody. Everybody. You know? That's what this time is all about. That's right. That's right. And so what our ancestors did was they looked to the plants, even in places like Egypt, where it didn't get that cold. Yeah, it gets rainy, you know. It gets rainy. I spent the rainy season in Alexandria when I was a kid, and I spent a December in Cairo. And my goodness, does it get cold. When you're up against that desert, it can be right pleasant during the day, right pleasant. And then at night, oh my goodness, you're looking for some wool pajamas or something, because it gets mighty chilly. It really does. I like chili, by the way. All different versions of it. Vegetarian, regular. I just like it. It's good. I like the real thing, too. Awfully good stuff. It occurs to me I'm hungry. But that's a different story. So, in Egypt, they used plants that stayed green all the time. Because their deciduous plants drop their leaves during the winter. They actually do. Just like everything else, you know. Not all the same way, but it's they have fig trees, they have sycamore trees, which have fruit. That's pretty good. Dream a little dream of me, right? That's a good song by Cass Elliot. I love that song. It's the way she sings it. God, what a voice. What a waste. But there were trees that kept their leaves, and stayed green. And those were associated with the god Osiris. Yeah. Why? Because he was reborn. He died. He was slain by his brother Set, Chaos. And he was reborn. Why? So that we might have a place to go after death. Of course, the average ancient Egyptian died at the age of 30. It's different now. Things have changed a lot for humanity. And so these plants become very, very important for our kind because they represent things to us. They represent us and they represent the earth, and they represent the cycles of life and birth and death and life and birth and death and hope and belief and faith. That's what they represent. So one of the most amazing plants, I think, is mistletoe. You know, we hang mistletoe and then you get to, you know, snog underneath it, right? You get to kiss. And the thing about mistletoe is that it is as deep as the ocean when it comes to symbolism. And mistletoe exists everywhere. It's all over the world in different forms and different types. But it is a parasitic plant. Actually, it's a hemiparasitic or semi-parasitic plant because it does feed off the tree. It can kill branches. Apple trees, it loves apple trees, but we all love an apple, don't we? But it also loves oak trees. Now, that makes it sacred to a lot of people, the Norse and, of course, the Druids. And the apple trees, of course, made it very, very sacred, and the oak, to the Romans, right? Because apples and oak trees were sacred to all those people. Completely. And especially the Druids, who were very much into the oak and apples, of course. So mistletoe is a fascinating plant because it is not a plant of the earth. It doesn't grow on the earth. It begins its life as a seed that is somehow propelled to or lands upon a limb. And then it shoots out this little barb, a little stem that kind of drills a hole into the stem or the branch of a tree. And then it begins to feed off of the tree, gets its food, gets its water from the host. And then when it starts to leaf out, it has its own photosynthesis. So that's why it's only a half parasite, because it can live. Now, it can kill the limb, but generally it doesn't kill it completely, you know. It does pretty well. Now, the Druids thought this was amazing. Now, I thought it was absolutely amazing. Now, in the wintertime, when the tree lost all its leaves, as it will, here in the tree is this living, living plant. Sometimes green. So here's this tree that looks dead, but here is this plant still alive with all its leaves. And it's vibrant. And sometimes that plant is golden in color. Ha ha. So here in this tree is this golden plant that is this big, like this big organism that is just hanging in the tree. So I'm one of the people who believes that that is the golden fleece. That's what the golden fleece was. Because the Druids would treat these mistletoe plants, these huge plants, with great reverence. They would treat them, they would take a part of the plant and they would cut it out with a golden sickle and never let it touch the ground, because it never could touch the ground, because it was that sacred. And they would cut it out, and they would take it, and they would harvest part of it for some rites. Yeah, Druids, they did all sorts of interesting things. We won't talk about them. But they might use them, for example, to make some potions. Mistletoe's pretty poisonous, so don't use it for anything. Okay? They're actually using it now in cancer research, because they're realizing that it does have medicinal properties, but it is extremely, extremely powerful and potent and can be dangerous and poisonous. You don't want to use any of the plants we're going to talk about today for anything other than, oh, isn't that pretty? Okay? Unless you really know what you're doing, obviously. So it's my theory that this is the golden fleece. Because we hear about Jason and the Argonauts. They went on that trip and they took off and they went all the way to Colchis. And Colchis, you know, some people think they know where it is. Well, I think they ran into the Druids, because this was a group of people who were extremely magical. They were very strange to the group that they, Jason and his crew. They're like, these people are weird, and they have all this magic. And he met Medea, right, whom he fell for pretty hard. And, of course, you know, she was a magician. She was a witch. He could call her a sorceress, but we're just a magician. And these people had this high magic that they had, right? And that's where he had to fight the skeletons and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, and then they had the big iron bull. And I think what we're talking about is he met the druids and the golden fleece, even though there's the story that the fleece came from, you know, it was the... Anyway, let's not get into that because I have things, a lot of things I want to talk about. But anyway, so... And Medea, holy mackerel, she was strong. She was strong. And of course, Jason used magic to win her over. And when she found out what he had done, holy was she mad. As a matter of fact, she was an annihilator. She killed his children, her children, too. She rode in a chariot that was pulled by serpents. I mean, she was not someone to mess with. And everyone was afraid of the druids, including, you know, the Romans, Julius Caesar. He was afraid of the druids. He said they were an extremely magical, powerful people. So that's what I think. Mistletoe was historically also the story of Aeneas. When he has to go into the underworld, he picks a golden bough. And I think that's exactly what it was. So mistletoe has always been had a reputation for this. Now, how does it, as a matter of fact, the story of Balder the Beautiful, who was the sun, you know, and he has this dream that he's going to die. And his mother says, oh, no, no, that can't be. And she gets this vow of everything, plants, animals, everything, anything that is in the sky, in the ocean, in the earth. But she misses the mistletoe. So Loki, he makes a dart out of a mistletoe and he throws it. Loki, you know, goes to his Baldur's brother, his blind brother, Hodur. And he says, Hodur, you know, let's throw this. And they're having this party to throw things at Baldur to hit, you know, to try and hurt him, and nothing will hurt him because everything's taken this vow not to hurt him. And they're laughing and they're drunk, and he takes this little dart and he says, let's throw this at him, and he aims it, and Hodor's very strong even though he's blind, and he throws this little dart of mistletoe, and mistletoe's wood, you know, and it goes right into Baldur's heart and it kills him. I mean, it's just this incredible story about mistletoe. And he dies, but they use mistletoe to bring him back. I mean, it's this incredible tale of what mistletoe's about. It's unearthly. It can kill. It can bring back to life, supposedly. And that's mistletoe. You know, it's this mystery. But it's a... And so in my death card, in the tarot deck that I invented, that I created, Andrew, that's my death card. And that's about... Because death is a foregone conclusion, and the dart has already been thrown, right? And Loki represents not only mischief, but chaos, and that you never know when the dart is... It's already been thrown. Once you're born, it's been thrown. That's it. So you live life in joy and happiness, and you can kiss under the mistletoe. You can do a lot of things under the mistletoe. They used to think it was an aphrodisiac, you know. Now, here's the thing. One of the pagan symbols of mistletoe is intense sexuality and fertility. Some people used to use it as kind of an aphrodisiac because they thought that the berries, you know, a little bit of the berries, but don't do this because it can also, you know, do the opposite. It can hurt you very badly. But they used to think that the... Some of the berry juice was like an irritant and would cause, arousal. But don't do that, you know, because it can also be deadly. But the white berries of some of the mistletoe species, they explode. And the seeds are in this white gooey substance that represented, you know, that were similar to... semen. And so it's sticky, and what it does is it can shoot out at 30 to 60 miles an hour, 20-30 feet, and it hits other plants, and that's how it propagates. Remarkable plant. So it came to represent fertility. It came to represent the concept of excitement and love. And because of this old druid thing, it also came to represent, it was used as a gift. They would gift it to other tribes. It represented peace. So today, it represents that as well. And it was also because of its paganism, it came to be forbidden in churches. You can't bring that mistletoe in our church because we know what it means. It's about fertility. And this time of year, because of all the long nights, used to be about fertility, because people would, you know, it got dark early, you'd sit around and, you know, you'd have dinner and then you'd whittle for a while and, well, you were knitting and I'm whittling and I'm kind of tired of whittling. Are you tired of knitting? Well, maybe we ought to go to bed. What are we going to do there? You got any ideas? You got any thoughts? Should we snuggle a little? Would that be good? You know, see what happens. You know, I mean, that is, there's no work. Can't do a whole lot of work, and don't want to waste firewood. I mean, we got body heat. Oh, that was fun. Okay, good night. You know, that sort of thing. Let's go on to Holly. I've known a couple girls named Holly. I don't think either one of them liked me much. I'm talking junior high school, by the way. But that's just... Maybe I wasn't real likable back then. I was, you know, the fat kid who dressed funny because my mom thought I should dress uniquely or something. So Holly... I love Holly. Not the girls, the plant. I've always loved Holly. You know it. Now, it's interesting, there are female Holly plants and male Holly plants. Did you know that? The female Holly plants are rather smooth leafed, and the male Holly plants are prickly. Prickly, prickly, prickly. And, not an ilex. It's called ilex. That's its genus. And, or is it species? I know it's kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. Thank you, Mrs. Oberto. But anyway, so... God bless her. Wow. She's an amazing lady. But anyway, so... it is so. If there was trouble in a household, a man and a woman, and they couldn't get along, then whatever Holly, male or female, blew to the front door first leaf, that's who got to run the household for the next year, in some parts of the world. Now, let's face it, that's probably just an old tale, because I don't think that's how things really work anywhere in the world, ever. But that's, that's how it goes. Whatever leaf comes into, you know, and it's like, no, that's not how things work anywhere. But that's one of those fun little stories, you know. And then you get a winkling of the eye, and, you know, it's like, no, they don't. But I love that idea. Holly is a fascinating plant because the stories behind it are incredible. Protection. To the pagan mind, it's also one of the, as is mistletoe, one of the 20 om plants. O-G-H-A-M. Om. Om. Open up your mouth and say om. Om is a divination and I've studied it, and I like it. I like it a lot. I may send off for some Om staves one of these days. What they are is just the they're just a hunk of each of the 20 different woods used in, and it's, but you have to get to know the what the staves mean, and it's really kind of cool. It's a nice little thing to do because you get to know the different woods. At one time, I had a gorse plant, which is one of them, which is a noxious weed in my state, and it just grew. I wanted one, and I thought, oh, I like the way this looks. And not long after that, one began to grow in my front yard, and I loved it. It was beautiful, and it grew in my front yard, and I thought, I want this. And then we had to do some stuff, and it was they dug it up. And I was like, my gorse plant is gone, and it's a noxious weed. And so I couldn't go out and buy one, but I loved it. It was worth it just by itself. And I had a Spanish broom, which is a broom, one of the gorse plants. I had an apple. It's still there, thank goodness. I mean, it's really quite remarkable. And, you know, anyway, back to the holly. The Om is one of them. And hollies are remarkable. They also protect from lightning. That was the story for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, that they protect from lightning. And so you say, well, how can that protect from lightning? Well, now they're finding out that it may be true. Who are they? Scientists. They're studying it. Now, why would they do that? Why would they study the because people were interested. They find out that they actually have, well, at least the ancients believed they had electrical properties. So they started studying them. They said, you know, there's something about the shape of holly that may actually protect plants, the plant itself, from lightning because the little doogie-doogie-doogie, you know, around the side. They actually, some of them call them like angry oak because they have the same shape as oak leaves. It's really quite fascinating, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of cool. Then there was the story of the Green Knight. If you've ever read the Arthurian tales, you know, there's a story about the big banquet. They're having a big banquet, and in walks this Green Knight. Now, he's just gigantic, and he's covered in holly, and he's carrying this big holly tree as a club, and he challenges Gawain. I think he challenges all of them to some sort of challenge, and he says, "Behead me." And Gawain stands up and says, "You must do it in one, you know, swipe of the kabong here," and he takes his sword out and he beheads him. And he stands right up and says, "Okay, now I get to do you." But he doesn't. It's a long story. It's part of the Arthurian myth, and it's part of the story of Parsifal and the Fisher King and the Holy Grail. Read your Dan Brown, you know, you'll get some of that. But if you really want to get into that Dan Brown stuff, look at Aleister Crowley's Chariot Card. Okay, you'll be blown away if you look at that, and you think about, wait a minute, that whole thing about there's a spoiler coming up here. So if you haven't done your Holy Grail story, Dan Brown, that whole thing, then Holy Blood, Holy Grail, then close your ears and go, la, 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 I'm not listening, la, 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 okay? But if you look at that, the charioteer has 10 diamonds on her armor, which is golden, her armor, and that represents the 10 is the Malkuth, and she has this big grail, and there is a drop of blood in it. That's right, she's pregnant, right? With a blood of the drop of Christ. So Crowley is basically tipping the whole thing years and years and years before the Holy Blood, Holy Grail book was written. That thing was so old hat. It was believed that there was an heir to Jesus many, many, I mean, hundreds of years before this stuff was written. Anyway, back to holly. So holly is about power. holly is about. Holly hedges were called witch hedges because it was believed that witches could run across the tops of the hedges at an incredible rate of speed, so fast that they couldn't be seen. Holly was used for magic. You could touch them, and you could feel the electricity, and you could gather magic from them. So I really wanted a holly tree. I wanted one badly, badly, badly. And so I wished for one. Wished, wish, wish. This tells you about wishing, by the way. And so I said, I really want a holly hedge between my neighbor and me. And then we have a fence there. And one day, I'm telling you, don't kid yourself about the power of the mind and the power of the elementals and the power of flora. And I stood out there, and there growing against that fence was a holly, little sprout. And I said, what in the world? It was a volunteer. I didn't plant it. The guy next door sure didn't plant it. And there it was. And I said, this is unbelievable. And it began to grow like crazy. And now there is this massive hedge, this fence between us and them. Now, they don't like it so much. He trims it, and I don't want it. I call it Odin because it is wild, and it is like this massive. It's like my beard, which is wild, and it's crazy and bristly and beautiful, and it's incredible. It's like this time of year. It's magical. And one, I saw him out there spraying, and I didn't know what he was spraying for, and he let it slip that he was using an herbicide, spectracide, a defoliant. And it died. And I mean, it died. And all the leaves fell, and I was angry, but he didn't admit it. But I knew what it was. And I went out there. And I laid my hands on it and over it, and I called. I called to the forces of, you know, whatever. And I could see his wife looking through the slats like, oh, my God, what have we done? You know, because this man is crazy. I called upon Odin, and I just, and whatever, just whatever. It didn't have to be Odin, I just whatever. And I was, maybe I was just out of my mind. I was so mad. And there was a sprout that came out because, you know, these things, this particular type of ivy or holly. And it just, you know, popped up a little plant, and it was Thor, I called it. We had to take it out because we re-landscaped. And then a little other one popped up, and I called it Loki, you know. And so I just did, you know, I did all this work over it, and I was just despondent. And had I had a ship, I would have given it a Viking funeral. But I was really, really mad that anyone would do this to it. And guess what? It came back to life. It was dormant. Maybe I don't know what was going on, but I thought it was dead. They thought it was dead. And some sort of, you know, glee. And it came back. And it came back with a vengeance. They did it again. And I did my thing again. And this time he said, well, I'm leaving it alone. I mean, he didn't admit to anything. But this time it came back. And it came back bigger and better. And I said, you know, this holly loves me. He said, it seems that way. He said, I love it. You know, it's bad luck. And it is, friends. It's bad luck to hurt holly. It's bad luck to hurt any of these plants. It's bad luck to hurt holly. And I'll just say it, that proved to be true. Okay? So, you don't want to mess with a witch's hedge. Anyway, on to ivy. Ivy and holly are linked. The holly and the ivy, right? Okay. Holly, by the way, was not allowed in churches for a very long time. I guess you can do it now. Why do you put a sprig of holly in your Christmas pudding, especially eating fruitcake, to hope that it doesn't hurt you, the fruitcake? No, I'm just, because it's a blessing to the family, right? You set it on fire because it is literally considered to be plant fire. I love that. Ivy is poisonous, deadly poisonous. You don't want to eat it. You don't want to. I read a thing where someone said they fed ivy to cattle and stuff like that. Their cattle would probably have not done too well. At the very worst, they would have had you know, real problems. But ivy, well, ivy clings, doesn't it? It clings and it grows. It's evergreen. It creeps in Victorian times because of that. They wrote it as being sensual and sexual and feminine and beautiful. And so it represented affairs and trysts and men were weak for it. And it represented softness and persistence. And it represented sometimes maternal instincts. And sometimes it represented evil women, you know. And it represented then witchcraft. And it represented poisonous schemes. And it represented love. And it represented sometimes tainted love. So ivy represented a lot of interesting things. How does that pertain to the holidays? Well, because ivy also represented the concept of living again, over and above staying alive, of the sun coming back. And it was connected to a holly. And what they would do is they would take these poles and they would wrap holly and ivy around them, you know? And those were known as Christmas trees. Yep, they sure were. They sure were. And you didn't want to have that type of Christmas tree in a church at all. It was not allowed. The type that was are, of course, our modern Christmas trees. And supposedly, the first modern Christmas tree was brought into a church by none other than Martin Luther. Martin Luther. The monk, the German monk. Right? Because he supposedly was out in the woods and he was looking through the trees and there were these beautiful stars and they were twinkle, twinkle. And he said, "My God, that's beautiful." And I think he was lost and he found his way. And so he said, "Let's cut down this tree." They took it into the church and he wired candles to them. And that's how supposedly our Christmas tree thing start. The Germans then, went with it. And it was Prince Albert who brought it to England. And from there, well, the rest is history. We do it today. And of course, trees are coniferous. And because of their shape, we'll get into that some other time. We'll get into the whole conical thing and what that has to do with rebirth and all that sort of thing. But we love our trees, don't we? And we love the scent of pine. And I can see I'm running out of time here, but that's okay because, I'll always have more time. But that leads to the Yule log. And why the Christmas tree? Why that? Because they have sap in them, and sap is highly flammable. That's so you put candles on them, right? But that goes to the Yule log. The Yule log was originally designed in order to help the sun. You had to help the sun, and you had to help the sun in order to light, to be bright enough to fight that low place on the horizon. So every family was actually expected to take a tree, like a small Christmas tree or like a big Christmas tree that you might have. And what you do is you would strip it of its limbs, or you might actually take them. And that's why you had a wreath. You would take the wreath and put it on your front door to say, "We are doing this. We are doing our part." And you would might burn it for kindling and that sort of thing. But what you would do is you would then take the log and you would feed it into the fireplace day after day after day. So you would have this huge log, this huge tree in your house, down the middle of your living room or your main room, feeding into the fireplace day after day after day. You would burn it, you would burn it, you would burn it, you would burn it for the days before the winter solstice and after, until the sun began to grow again on the horizon, before it began to go. So that's the days before the winter solstice, probably the week before. I know now it's the 12 days of Christmas, Advent, you know, which is the day of Christmas and then the 12 days afterwards, right, leading to the Epiphany, the 12 days of Christmas, as it were. So that's what a Yule log is. A Yule log was originally designed to burn enough heat through the coniferous plants, these sappy, you know, tarry that burn and crackle and explode and stuff like that, in order to give the sun power to once again light and go up. And so when you have a Christmas tree in your house, what you're doing is you're replicating that. You're replicating, you're saying, I have this symbol of the fire of the sun. And that's the conical part of it, right? That's part of it, is that pyre, you know, that fiery thing that you have in your house. I once had a Christmas tree that was so dry, I bought it on Christmas Eve, and it was so dry that the day after Christmas, I had to get rid of it because it was a fire hazard. So, the flora of the holiday. I hope you had fun. I loved it. I love this stuff. I love the symbolism of things and how they get there. And that's the wonder of it. And we just pile meaning after meaning after religious meaning, and we lose what it's really about. It's easy to do that. And we do it so fast and so completely that we're completely numb to where it really came from and how fear became something so much more beautiful. Right? And I love the beauty of it. And it's nature. We work hand in hand with nature, who is our real friend. Don't you think? All right. All right, my friends. Until next week, I wish you all peace and love. Talk to you later. Have a happy holiday, would you? It's now. Be happy. Try to be happy. This has been a rough year. Let's enjoy what's left of it. That way we can kick it through the goalposts. Next week.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah. 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. to those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy, because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but it's pretty good stuff. And in Montpelier, Vermont, they have flooding. And that's Vermont is the same sort of thing. A lot of